Rennie. This is Rennie Harris, better known in Philadelphia as Prince of the Ghetto. Rennie is the organizer of the Scanner Boys, and what he can do is introduce the crew, tell us a little bit about their history, and then we'll begin to look at a few of the dance moves.
Hello, how you doing? Hello, how you doing? All right, I'm going to introduce you to my crew. I'm going to give you a little background on them as I introduce you to them. Right here to my left, we have Dave the Renegade. He was formerly in a group called Short Circuit. Next, we have the hip-hop kid originally from the New York Bronx, now living in Philadelphia. He was formerly in a group called the Furious Rockers. Next, we have Wild Style, formerly the captain of the 25 Star Jammers, a very, very big group in Philadelphia. Last, we have Shalimar, forming a group called Short Wave. Was that Short Wave, or did I get it right? I must have got it wrong, because he was in a lot of groups, you see. All right. Oh, it's Shockwave. I'm sorry. I know a lot of you are probably wondering, how do you pop or how do you break dance? Right? That's what I'm going to try to do today. I'm going to try to explain how you do that, okay? Before we do this, I'm going to have everybody here say hi to you, because they think I dog the show, okay? So we're going to have them pass the thing down and say hi to you, and you say hi back, okay? Okay? All right.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello, how are you today?
Hello.
And wasn't that nice? All right. Hello. All right. Now, since we got all acquainted now, we're going to start to learn how to pop. I want you to know that popping isn't very hard. Isn't very hard if you're very coordinated, and if you're not coordinated, it still is not hard, okay? All you have to do is remember to put one part after the other, all right? So I'm going to give you a quick little demonstration with my arm, and if you want, you can stick your arm out to the side, but don't hit your partner next to you, okay? All right. It's like this. You have your arm out. The first thing you would do is put your hand down like this.
Come on, let's elbow. Get some hands out over
yes.
there in the audience.
You can do this. This doesn't mean you're funny or nothing. All right? Okay. Your hand, elbow, shoulder. Just bring it up like this, like you're getting ready to touch your head with your shoulder, okay? Then it comes around to your head. Okay? Now, we're going to go to the other arm, and now everybody's stuck for a while. You can just wait it out. All right, now we're going to bring it out back to the elbow, back to your wrist. Your hand. When you bring it out on the other side, it's just like almost like a ballet move. You'll be like this. You'll come like that. Okay? Just bring up the shoulder first, elbow, hand. Remember, it's hand, elbow, shoulder, your head. And then bring it over and reverse it all the way around. I'm going to do it for you real fast. Then I'm going to show you how it looks. First I'll show you how it looks in the waving motion. Then I'll break it down for you, okay? Wave and break it down for you. All right? It's very easy to do. All you have to do is remember the hand, elbow, shoulder, your head, and reverse it on the same way on the other side. You do that in the mirror for like a week or two, guaranteed to be the best poppers in D.C. Bet. All right? Now, I want you to know that we are the most educated group in Philadelphia about street dancing. We know almost over 50 styles of popping. We can't master all of those because it takes a long time to master a lot of styles. But the ones we did master, I'm going to tell you about. The ostrich. That's ostrich, your ape, king cobra. That all of that is animation moves. They're very superior in Philadelphia. The king tut, California tick, breakdown, the panic. Your arm waves, electric boogaloo, master boogaloo. You have foot glides. Body control, body waving. You have pantomime. You have
comedy pop.
Comedy pop. Can't forget the comedy pop. Comedy pop is what a lot of New Yorkers do. New Yorkers smile at you while they dance. In Philadelphia, they do not smile when they dance. They look serious. They concentrate. You will see some of that concentration today on Shalimar because he never smiles when he dances, only once in a while. But that's that Philadelphia concentration because Philadelphia takes popping very seriously. A lot of Californians smile when they dance. That's comedy pop, when you do your moves and make people laugh, okay? Let me see, what other styles do we have? Did I forget any styles? Peanut Gallery over there, be quiet. Oh, I can't forget the Oriental pop. It's something that Shalimar and I invented a couple months ago, actually August. We won a big contest over there, just the two of us. We went against 14 groups, and they had at least like six people in their group, and we did the Oriental pop and just took the whole thing. So you can clap for that one, though.
And you can see the Oriental pop done in tomorrow's review.
Yes, you will.
He says, oh, no.
Oriental pop takes a lot out of you. After you do it, you feel like you've been dancing for 7-8 hours because it's a very tense dance, just like popping. Popping is a lot of body control and mind control. You make your body do what you want it to do, okay? Enough talk. I know you're saying this guy is starting to bore me. We're going to have Shalimar come up here and demonstrate a couple. He's going to do two styles of which, what kind of style you want to do, tell him. Oh, he's going to do hard pop. It's very serious pop. If you could take your, yeah, so you can see his eyes. All right, that's a hard pop. He's going to demonstrate a California tick. All right, hold up. We're going to have our personal beatbox get down for you, all right? Is this what they do in the street to get their noises for those people that dance in the street and don't have no box to dance off, you know, radio. So we have your person here that does this for you, okay?
Move the cord away so we can... It's a wild style on the beatbox. Go ahead, wild style.
California tick. Body tick. All right. No problem. All right. It's kind of hard for you to, maybe you can't see the styles coming in. But to a dancer, you can see, a street dancer, you can see the styles. Sometimes you can do five styles in one move almost, you know? So it's very hard to see unless you really know, all right? We're going to have Dave the Renegade get up here. He's the master of Boogaloo. Boogaloo is very easy to do. We're going to have him do this for you. So what's going on here? That's that comedy stuff I was telling you about. All right, let's go. This is Dave the Renegade.
Beat fast, low.
He's trying to get his rhythm together here. All right. Don't you want to see more of that? All right. Dave, do more of that. He's going to put a little electric boogaloo into this. That's a, he gets a little electrified. Hey, we like that. Electric. All right, we're gonna have the hip hop kid get up here and demonstrate one breakdance move, okay? Maybe two, I think. You think he hit a suicide up here? Yeah, all right. He's going to demonstrate a suicide and one-leg swipes, okay? When you see a suicide, you'll know the suicide when you see it, okay? Check it out. Yeah, you can do it. Yeah, suicide, come on. Oh, man, he's like, that's that comedy stuff I was telling you about. All right. Right. You gonna do it with your glasses on? Don't break them. You break. All right, this is a suicide. That's called a suicide. All right, if you heard a big boom, that was not his back. That was his foot that landed. He landed on his foot like that. He used a ball of his back hair.
Ouch.
Yeah, After Effects. All right, don't go nowhere. One leg swipes is going to demonstrate. All right, come on.
Come on, Chach.
All right, come on, chill out, chill out.
Attention. One
this
leg
is a floor
swipe.
Rock.
Here we go.
One leg swipes.
Yes.
That's a one leg swipes.
9999.
By the way, since you're probably wondering why is this guy acting like this? If you remember in the beginning of the show, we introduced everybody. His name is Wild Style. this is why they call him Wild Style, because he is very unpredictable all the time. All right. All right, we got him. He's talking. He's the one making all the noises here. We're going to get Wild Style get up here. And he's he hates
this one. My conscience is saying no. Please do not call him up there on the stage.
Shut up. Will you shut up, please?
No.
Would you please shut up?
No. I think we should let Rennie know now that you do not want to do any moves.
Shut up, please. Come on now. People can hear you out here.
I don't care. This is Kevin's conscience speaking, and he is now saying that he does not want to do any moves.
All right, we're going to have Wild Style do animation. Animation pop is like a break. You could do it in breakdancing and popping. He's going to turn into a crab and then transform himself into an ape. All right, I'm going to attempt to make some noises here. Can we get... All right, come on. We're running out of time out of here, come on. He's gonna turn into a crab. Wild Style, let's go. All right, no noises. Yeah. Animation is turning into any kind of animal you want to, okay? This is a very superior move, all right? He's a crab right now, and I want this crab to go under the bridge so he can get down to Philadelphia. So we're going to have a human bridge here, and this crab's going to go home because he wants to go to Philadelphia because he misses his mother. Let's go, little crabby. Come on. Let's go. Can you make it? He's getting there. Little crabby, up. The little crabby went home to Philadelphia. He went under the bridge. All right, the bridge can fall down now, and the little crabby will turn into an ape.
Okay. Prince is going to turn into an ostrich.
Another animation move here, the ostrich.
And from that, he will turn into a puppet. Look at that, Pinocchio.
And Snoop. And from there, he will turn into a bat, a cat, a mouse, a dog, a rat. Not anymore. A zebra.
We can't do that
gremlin.
Unless we're in a show here, all right? All right. Wild style. Ick. All right, we're going to have a little bit of comedy. See, comedy pop has to take you by surprise, all right? So if I do this, you have to laugh because you know what I'm getting ready to do because you know you're supposed to laugh, right? And when you know you're supposed to laugh and then it doesn't come off funny that much, you laugh because you're being polite. So, what I'm going to do is, even if you don't laugh, you better laugh.
I'm going to laugh. Don't worry. This concludes another episode of The Twilight Zone.
Can I ask you a question? Just between me and you. Did you laugh because I told you? Because did you laugh because I was funny? All right, all the funny people, raise your hand. I didn't know all of you were funny. That's one of my corny jokes there. All right. We're going to take any questions right now on breakdancing, the way we dress, why we wear the things we do. My sneakers with my shoestring checkers. I had a lot of people come up to me today and say, well, how did you do that? I will tell you how to do it if you want to know. Ask us anything. Questions. Let's go. All these little people.
Free food or what?
All right. Okay. You take one shoestring, correcto, and you take it, you put the end like that. I don't know if you can see that. See the end of that? I stuck it in here like this, right? Like so, all right. Now you take your shoestring and you bring it all the way around to make one shoestring go across a loop. You know how that looks? Like the shoes are looking in the window downtown? You see the display, they have one shoestring going across. You wanted to get it like that. Then you take the other shoestring, the white one, and you just skip the loop all the way through, back and forth, and you have checkered shoestrings. Okay? It sounds easy, doesn't it?
No.
Uh-huh. Doubtful minds.
Why don't you just hand them one of your sneakers?
No.
Talking about shoestrings is a real important part. All right. No more wild style for a while. It's a real important part of the entire hip-hop scene. What we're talking about here is costuming. We talked earlier in the last workshop about the relationship between the DJs, the rappers, the breakdancers, the language that they use. This is just as important an aspect. The graffiti artist, that's what I left out. This is just as important an aspect, the costumes and the language of the hip-hop community. Part of the costuming and very important part is what you do with your shoes or your sneakers. Are there other questions out there? All right.
Do we know how to do the centipede and the worm? Does anyone know how to do the centipede and the worm? That's good. All right, sorry. Seriously, we're going to have two people. I guess not on the stage? Yeah, you're dirty. Your mom's going to kill me.
I'll tell you what we'll do. The stage here is not really a good stage for dancing. First, because it's not even, and second of all, because it's filthy. What we can ask them to do, and you can make a special request right now, is that when they do their main performance after 4 o'clock on the main stage where we have linoleum laid down, make sure that they do the centipede and the worm. Now, how many people want them to do that on the main stage? Let's hear it. Come on.
Hey, it's all good.
Okay, public mandate.
All right.
Is there another question?
Belly waves?
We have a question right over here. Right. The King Tut. We have a request for the move from Shalimar, the King Tut.
King Tut, this is a very superior move. Come on, Mari Rash. Or sometimes we call him Ramalash. Oh, before he does this, I want
to
all
the
of
friends,
you.
To the front.
Go ahead. I kind of messed him up with that.
Messed up again.
Let's get him out here again. Let's go. Come on out.
Shut it.
Remember that concentration I told you about that Shalimar used to have? Seriously now. Salmon playing gremlins.
Okay.
If you notice very, if you can notice his muscles tensing up, and can you see him shaking? Very difficult and strong move. Body control. All right, it's here for Shalimar. All right. I need two more questions, and y'all can vote on who y'all want to ask the question.
Which one? Right
there. Double hands. Can we do the California worm? We can do the Mexican worm. And no, seriously, we can do the California worm. It's all actually done the same way. It's certain moves that everyone does, okay? We'll do that on stage just for you, okay? All right, here we go. He just asked me, can I do the wave? What kind of wave? Oh, pass the body, pass it through the other body? Y'all like that one? All right, I guess I could get Shalimar up here again, or anybody else want to come up? Wild style. Hip, all of them?
Oh,
that was the best suggestion you made all day, because these guys are lazy. Up and at them. Hip hop kid doesn't pop, but we're gonna have him on the end anyway.
Can I play the beatbox instead?
Yeah, we'll have you wanna play the beatbox?
Okay, in order to get beat wild it, style, this is, in order to get wild style in here, we're gonna get MC Caesar with the Punk Funk Nation to give us the beatbox.
Hugger,
All right. All right, we're going to close this down for you real fast. We're going to tick, we're going to break Worm, California, Mexican Worm and Squirm all on the main stage just for you guys. Can you make it? Are you out of school yet? Oh, all right. Okay, great.
Okay.
Listen, we would like to salute you, the people of Washington, D.C., okay? We're going to give you the Scanner Boy salute. You should stay around for this one. This is decent. That's that breaker talk for you. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Let's have a hand for the Scanner Boys of Philadelphia.
4:15, don't forget.
Over on the main stage, Grandmaster Nell and the Punk Funk Nation, the International Playgirls and the Scanner Boys at 4:15. We're going to be doing a workshop here in just a few minutes on the traditional traveling forms of black entertainment, minstrelsy, vaudeville, and medicine shows with Willie Ashcan Jones, for those of you who wish to stay around. Watch the workshop. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, come right up. Don't gather around there. Gather around over here. Right over here. You're about to be educated. You're about to be entertained. You're about to see an erudite performance. All you have to do is join us and sit down here at the stage. That's right. Over there, right, look at these great seats we have here. Come on, don't walk that way. You in the back over there. This way, come on up. A lot of seats here, a lot of time. Everybody, come on up and have a seat. We're about to do a workshop here with the one and only, the amazing, the astounding, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, the only Ashcan Jones in the world. I guarantee you, you'll never find another person named Ashcan. We had to look long and hard in Philadelphia to find this one, and a find he was. So, gather around, and we're about to start the workshop. You say, what is that guy doing up there? What is happening on this stage? We're going to give you an answer to that, too. You know, on the main stage, you see a lot of the performances, and you go home, and you say, hey, I saw a great dancer. I saw a great comedian. I saw a great singer. And then they say, yeah, what was he doing? And to try to explain, and they say, yeah, what's his history? Tell me the story. It's the folk festival. We're supposed to learn. And you scratch your head and say, I don't remember. The reason you don't remember is because you didn't come to the workshop stage and hear the performers tell the story themselves. What we're trying to do here in the narrative stage is break down some of the traditions, allowing the performers to tell you the story, to tell you a little bit about their own history, and meanwhile telling you how what they are doing over on the main performance stage for the Philadelphia area, how that fits in to broader traditions of black entertainment and black tradition. The person we have with us on stage today is Mr. Willie Ashcan Jones. Willie Jones was born and raised on a farm in Georgia and left at a very young age. In the ensuing years, he worked with carnivals, with circuses, as a dancer with traveling revues, in Broadway shows, in Marx Brothers movies, that's right, in Marx Brothers movies, with a minstrel show, and finally back with his own carnival show, which he owned and operated for more than 30 years. Let's have a big hand, please, for Willie Ashcan Jones. And we'll go ahead and start this workshop by asking him to tell us how in the world he first got involved in show business from a farm in Georgia.
Well, I can tell you I got involved because it was a hard work on the farm, I can tell you that. And I didn't like hard work. And they used to have carnivals and tent shows come to my hometown. And when they would come, we would go out there and bring water. See, didn't have no running water. You had to bring the water there. We would bring the water for the animals, and we would get in free. That's the only way we got in there, because we didn't have money. We would get in free. They would let us in free. And so one day, one come by, and he asked me, did I want to go with him? And I told him, yeah. And that's the way I left Georgia.
So you left Georgia working with a show then? You weren't entertaining.
No, I wasn't entertaining. No, I was just helping keep water for the animals and running errands for the performers and the people that worked the show.
Now, how was it that you got up there on the stage the first time, Willie?
Well, I didn't get up on stage there. I come on, and when I got north, what we call north then, when I got in Washington, I was far enough, I left them. And I went on to Atlantic City. I had an aunt in Atlantic City, so I went to her. And so she made me go to school 1 year. She wanted me to go more than 1 year, but that's when I started dancing. Started doing a dance called the Snake Hip. And me and my partner, that's when we started traveling on the road. But my partner was good, and I wasn't so good. So they wanted to let me go and keep my partner. But my partner told him if they let me go, he was going too. So I slipped off from my partner. He didn't know I was going. So then I come on back into New York.
Now, how did you get back? First of all, what kind of show was it that you were dancing with then?
At that time, I was dancing with the Whitman sisters.
Uh-huh. And where were you showing?
Well, we were showing. We had played Washington, D.C. We left there and went to North Carolina. We played Raleigh, North Carolina. Left Raleigh, North Carolina. And went to Columbia, South Carolina. And Augusta, Georgia, where they
So you're working in theaters?
Oh, that's what we were working in theaters.
Right.
Yeah. At that time, that's what we were working in the theaters.
So you're down there in Augusta, Georgia. Now, how did you get back up to Atlantic City?
Get back to Atlantic City? I didn't go back to Atlantic City. That's when I went to New York.
Okay. How'd you get up back to New York?
Well, that time, one show will be going, and another will be coming. So that time, Butterbeans and Susie was coming by, and Mon Rainey. And I joined them and come on back up to New York.
Also in theaters?
And theaters with them. But when I got to New York again, you had to be real good to play New York. So they let me go. So then I went to going to the Savoy Ballroom. I was shining shoes downtown and going to the Savoy Ballroom. So that's when I started the Lindy Hop dance with Whitey Savoy Lindy Hoppers out of New York City.
So first of all, what we're talking about is the tradition of the circus and carnival, leaving there as a worker, going on up north into Atlantic City, then joining troops who were working the Black Vaudeville Circuit, what was known then as the TOBA Circuit.
That's right.
Now, TOBA officially stood for Theater Owners Booking Association.
Right.
Now, that's not exactly what folks used to say it stood for, was it, Willie?
No, we didn't anyway. We always had tough on black actors.
It was a black circuit, a vaudeville circuit that ran primarily down the East Coast. And you had black traveling troops who would go from theater to theater working on the circuit. Willie started off as a young snake hip dancer. And you were only how old when you started that?
Oh, I was about 16 when I was ready to start that.
Worked his way all the way down south where the show let him go, more or less, or where he left the show when he was relieved of performing duties. So then he joined another show with the great blues singer Ma Rainey and the comedy team Butterbeans and Susie, working his way back up north until he got to New York City. There he became a dancer, specifically a Lindy Hop dancer, with what is certainly the most well-known of all the Lindy Hop troops in the United States at that time, Whitey's Lindy Hoppers, working out of the Savoy Ballroom. Now, what was it that was so unique about Whitey's?
Well, it was just like breakdancing today. We rehearsed it. If you want to be a good breakdancer, you don't just get out there and do it. You have to rehearse and know what you're doing. So Lindy Hop, we know what we were doing, and we rehearsed it. And that's what made it different from other people doing it. Everybody Lindy Hop, but they couldn't Lindy Hop like we could, and we had fast music for the next thing. It was real fast. And years ago, all dance floors were slick. All good dance floors was wax. And we would go there with a pair of sneakers. And when we get there, we would change our shoes and put on sneakers. And we could stand up on the floor where other people couldn't.
Now, how many people out here know how to do the Lindy Hop? Uh-oh. Uh-oh. How many people out here know anything about the dance to Lindy Hop. One, two, three, four. The Lindy Hop was a couple dance that evolved in the, I guess in about 1929, named originally after Charles Lindbergh's Hop Across the Atlantic. Right. The unique thing about the Lindy Hop was that it involved a breakaway move where you let go of your partner, or at least you moved, at first you moved away from your partner. You originally still held her and you split apart and did moves where you weren't close to each other. And ultimately it evolved to the point where you allowed your partner to leave you entirely. Really the first couple dance where the partners were separated, they were not touching. Now what happened in the Savoy Ballroom was that the Lindy Hoppers did a little more with the dance than usual. Exactly what did the Savoy Lindy Hoppers bring to the dance that made it a little bit different from what you found in the streets and in other ballrooms?
Well, we had a teacher named Whitey, Herbert White, and he was an old dancer. And he knowed, you know, he did all types of dancing. So everything that he could sneak in there that wouldn't mess with another dance, he would put it in. So he would put different things in. He would get a little peep from, you know, he would see a exotic dancer, and he knowed those things, what they did. And he would have the girl, when you throw them out, every now and then to do a little exotic. But we were still holding the hand. And all right, acrobatic. We could do some of it, but you couldn't turn hand loose to do it. So we could sneak that in. Had a little waltz in there, but you couldn't turn hand loose to do it. If you turn your hand loose, you had to come right back. And that breakaway, that was the dance before the Lindy Hop. It was the name of the dance was breakaway. The first one I can remember was Collegian. After Collegian, the breakaway, and after the breakaway come the Lindy Hop. And the difference in it, and all the other dances, you throw the girl one way, round this way. But the Lindy Hop, when Shorty Snowden did it, he threw the girl back that way. And she couldn't get out good, she hopped out. And Lindbergh just had made his flight, and he called it the Lindy Hop. And they started doing it, and that's Paul Whiteman took them. I wasn't with that group. Paul Whiteman took them and carried them all over the world. Shorty Snowden and B.
There's one important thing to note in what Willie is saying here. He's talking about Whitey incorporating all these other moves in the dance. Now, for those of you who have seen breakdancers or have seen the Disco Queens and Kings on our stage here, you'll notice that there are dance sequences clearly drawn from other traditions. There might be a dance sequence which looks like it has a bit of ballet in it. There might be a dance sequence which looks similar to Russian traditional dancing. There might be an acrobatic move. This was really the key to the success of Whitey's Lindy Hoppers. They were able to incorporate a wide variety of dance moves into their own repertoire. Now, the ones that they became best known for were the acrobatic moves. They took the moves of flash dancing of the period, put them with a social dance of the ballroom floor. What were some of the acrobatic moves that you would do on the dance floor with the Lindy?
Well, the Lindy, that's start to throw them over your head, cross your back. You throw them from one partner to the other. Between your legs, you step over them, slide round, and then you had guys doing knee spin. The girl will hold them up and he turn all the way down to the floor and do knee spins and lock the legs and catch each other.
When you say knee spins, immediately people should think they're breakdancing right away. It's the same basic move that they were doing in some of the performance types of Lindy Hop. Now, it's hard to understand the real acrobatics that go into Lindy dancing or Savoy Lindy dancing unless you actually see someone do it. If you're able to see old film clips, for example, in the Marx Brothers movie Day at the Races, you'll see Willie Jones and some of his fellow colleagues doing some of the acrobatic moves, which would include such things as the males throwing their female partners up to 15 to 20 feet into the air in front of them. She would come down on her knees, push off with her knees, they would grab her around the waist, throw her up as high as they could. Then when she came down the next time, instead of landing on her feet, the male partner would spread his legs apart, catch her at the waist as she's coming down, and throw her under his legs where she went sliding across the floor on a patch, conveniently patched on. so that she wouldn't get any scratches. The floor was slick, but just in case. Sliding across as many as 30 or 40 feet across the floor, only to meet another male partner at the other end, roll right into the dance and not miss a beat. Now that's the sort of acrobatics that characterized the work of Whitey's Lindy Hoppers. The Lindy Hoppers that Whitey trained worked in a variety of settings.
Three.
Where would you, what sort of places would you work?
Well, we work nightclubs, auditoriums, and any place that it was a big crowd. We worked a lot of places, like the World Fair. We worked the World Fair in 1939 in New York City.
There was a special pavilion at the 1939 World's Fair set up by the Savoy Ballroom.
Yeah, just like this one here.
Just for the Lindy Hoppers.
Just like we got this set up here. That's the way it was set up for the Savoy Lindy Hoppers. Then part of us went at that same time. They had the exhibition in Frisco. And some of us went out to Frisco for it, for the exhibition out there.
Now, the Lindy Hop wasn't confined to the particular performances of Whitey's Lindy Hoppers, obviously. And very soon, some of the acrobatic Lindy Hoppers who were working with Whitey's troops began to present the Lindy Hop in traveling stages. Now, Willie Jones here began to work with probably the most renowned black traveling revue that worked out of New York City from the late 20s, really, through the 30s and 40s, a revue called Irvin C. Miller's Brownskin Models. Willie, how was it that you hooked up with Miller, and what exactly, what kind of show was that?
Well, Miller had a show, and that show he had to have a lot of places. He would have a flash. In fact, we were a flash dancer. What we did, we couldn't do it over 3 minutes. We couldn't do it 3 minutes, a piece.
Right.
But I'd say six of us would do about 11 minutes or 10 minutes, because we would do 3 minutes a piece, and then we would do 2 minutes together. Right. All of us do 2 minutes together. Well, what he would like then, he would have somebody wanted to change. He wanted to break up a bunch of two groups of singers were singing here. So this group just had went off, you understand? Don't want to bring another group on, because this group went off, had the house in the up row. And something like us was the only thing could quiet it down. You couldn't put another singer there, because they wouldn't even give him a chance, you understand, to see whether he was good or no, because they'd be applauding so for the other singers that just went off. So we'll come in between that to break it up.
So when you were traveling with Irvin C. Miller, in those first years that you brought a group of Lindy Hoppers
yes.
onto that stage, were you working in theaters then?
Oh, yeah, we were working in theaters.
So you were back basically on the vaudeville circuit.
Oh, yeah, I was on the vaudeville circuit. But after we got on that circuit, it was right after World War II then, and nobody wanted you into the theaters because everybody had plenty of money, and the theater manager didn't need nobody to come in the theater then. So you usually went to the theater to make so the man would make more money. But then they didn't need you. They had plenty of, pictures, and everybody had money to come to it. So that's when Irvin C. Miller bought the Florida Blossom, and it was called the Brownskin Model and the Florida Blossom combined.
Now, how many of you all are familiar with the black tradition of minstrel shows? You know, when people think of minstrel shows, especially younger people and white audiences, they tend to think immediately of the minstrel shows of the 1800s, when groups of white people would put on burnt cork and begin to do caricatures of African-American dance, of African-American humor, of African-American song and music. In the late 1800s, however, a number of blacks themselves began not only to enter into minstrel shows, but also to own and manage their own shows. By the 1920s and 30s, there were a number of very large traveling tent shows owned and operated by blacks, showing primarily to black audiences, working with entirely black casts that went under the name of minstrel shows and followed somewhat the format of the old 19th century minstrel shows. Now, in this century, the most popular of those were probably the Florida Blossom Minstrels and the Silas Green from New Orleans. The Florida Blossoms showed under tent until the late 1940s, when they joined with Irvin C. Miller, who was working a vaudeville show. and the two forms went together and went out on the road, showing under a huge blacktop, or not blacktop, big
tent.
Top, I should
big
say,
top, yeah,
to African-American audiences. Now, in that sort of show, Willie, what sort of entertainment would you present to the audiences?
Well, that at first you would have to have a big band. You had a band, and the next thing you would have was chorus girls. You would have to have a line of girls. See, then you have 12 girls, six in the front row and six in the back row. Then after that, you would have some kind of act. Don't care what kind of act. It may be a dance act, a Spanish dance act, a tap dance act, a blues singer, or somebody maybe, some woman or another with an act. That then they used to play trumpet. They played saxophone. And they did an act with it because it was rare to see a lady do that.
Right.
We had all those kind of acts with us. One woman doing a chair dance, dancing with a rope. You had all them were specialists
right.
at that time. So you would see that, and then you see a comedian, and then they always bring the band on in the middle. It did what you call a band number. Because everybody wanted to hear the band, they would do two or three numbers. And then after that, they bring the chorus girls on again. And at the end of it, everybody come on the stage.
Right.
That was the finale. You had to know the opening and the beginning of the show.
Now, a lot of people, when they hear stories like this, we're talking about a form of professional entertainment. The first question is, why are you addressing this at a folk festival? A folk festival is someplace where you're supposed to talk about traditions going from generation to generation. Yet what does this have to do with entertainment and professional commercial entertainment? The answer is this. In entertainment, in forms such as African-American minstrelsy, black vaudeville, black medicine shows, black carnival shows, you had born traditions of entertainment, traditions of comedy, forms of dancing, such as forms of tap dancing and flash dancing, forms of music which were not born on the street, which were not born in the community, but were actually developed on the entertainment stage. These traditions were then passed down not from father to son and mother to daughter, but rather performer to performer, so that generation after generation after generation of performers working those shows would pass down the same traditions of comedy, of dance, of music. Now, with Willie Jones, who was working at this time as a Lindy Hop dancer with a combined minstrel and vaudeville show, he began to realize that as he got older, it was going to be harder and harder for him to keep doing the sort of flash Lindy hopping that he was doing at the time. As he said, the Lindy hoppers would maybe doing maybe 3 minutes each. That flash dancing took everything out of you. What he did then was turn to one of the other traditional forms in the show. And what did you begin to do, Willie, as you realized your dancing days wouldn't last forever?
Well, I think my partner...